Hello, and welcome to the Freedom Writers Podcast, a show about education and how it can change the world. I'm your host, Erin Gruel, and this is episode 14, Your Voice, Your Choice. Whether you're an educator, a parent, a mentor, or a student, our purpose is to engage, enlighten, and empower you to make a difference. Our movie, Freedom Writers, is filled with memorable characters based on my actual students. For many viewers, the standout character is Ava Benitez, the Latina student whose loyalty is put to the test when she's called to testify in a murder trial. Because of her experiences in room 203, Ava chooses to do the right thing, even when it means testifying against a fellow gang member. Several other iconic moments in the movie involve Ava's character, from the liquor store shooting, her visceral "I hate white people" monologue, and her reading of the diary of Anne Frank. Many viewers say that Ava's transformation is the most moving and profound. In today's episode, we bring you the woman behind the amazing portrayal of that character, the talented actress turned activist, April Hernandez Castillo. When we met in New York, April and I discussed the making of Freedom Writers, and then dove even deeper about empowering women and helping people heal from wounds of depression and abuse. I can't wait for you to hear April's empowering words. But first, we have our intro segment where Freedom Writer Sue Ellen Alpizar talks about her close friend and fellow Freedom Writer, Maria Reyes. Maria is the real person that the character Ava was based on. And Sue Ellen and Maria are both on the cover of our book, The Freedom Writer's Diary. In this segment, Sue Ellen shares her memories about Maria and what it was like seeing April Hernandez portray her best friend on screen. Next, for our diary of the day, we have a stirring excerpt from April's book, Your Voice, Your Choice, about the strength and resilience needed to overcome and heal. And finally, for our featured discussion, we go behind the scenes with April Hernandez to discuss her preparation to portray my student Maria. She tells stories about the cast, reflects on the progress of women and minority representation in the film industry, and shares how the Freedom Writers movie inspired her to become an author and a public speaker. April then takes us into her personal story about escaping teen dating violence, using her voice to find healing and hope. As you listen today, I invite you to ponder how you can find your purpose and become your most powerful self. Now, here's Sue Ellen.
My name is Sue Ellen Alpizar, and I first started Wilson my freshman year. I remember seeing Maria for the first time, her being dropped off in the lowrider in front of school. We ran in very different crowds because I remember her being fully involved in the gang life, knowing don't mess with her because she will kick your ass. I mean, she's like not even 5 feet tall, but she has this presence about her that's so towering and so larger than life. I didn't think at first I had anything in common with her because she's so different from me. She's strong, she's loud. Even though she's in this little package, I mean, she packs a punch. I remember one day we were joking around and I said, "Oh, you can't kick my butt. There's no way. I'm almost 6 feet tall." And then the next thing you know, she swooped me off of my feet and I was on the floor looking up at her and I was just like, okay, you can do serious damage. And so what I saw afterwards through the Freedom Writers was a different growth, especially the diary of Anne Frank really spoke to her. Anne's story made her realize how much we are all alike. It's easy to look at her and just say, this is a tiny little Mexican girl that obviously used to be a chola, but you don't quite realize how much she's been through until you see what her story is. You know, she really dreamt big and helped us reach even higher than we thought we could. I remember seeing Maria in a Freedom Writer event around our senior year, and of course it had to do with her speaking. She spoke from the heart, and it just, you could feel that. What she was saying was powerful, and I remember thinking, damn, I wish I could speak like that. And so I think my senior year, we really kind of aligned and got close because I felt like we were both working on the same cause, and we wanted to do the same things, and we wanted to make a change. When we graduated from Wilson High, we were inseparable, and they used to call us the girls. We first started at Long Beach Community College, and then we ended up starting to work in the same company, and we really became this very close-knit family. We were working on the book, getting that published together. It was just this great bonding experience that we had that is something special that we still share to this day. When I found out that there was going to be a movie made about the Freedom Riders, at first I didn't believe it. It was just so surreal. I didn't know how they could put 4 years into a movie, and I didn't know whose story was going to be featured. I mean, there's 150 of us. And when I realized that Maria was actually going to be one of the main characters, I felt that it was perfect because her story embodies the growth that we have all done. She was one of the hardest people to reach, and she was really one of the Freedomers that had the most difficult time changing. I mean, she had her family not in her corner. She had her neighborhood against her, and she had her gangs that she was involved in such an early age. And so I realized how important it was to share her story because it showed that there is possibility for change. In the process of the movie, we came to the point where we realized that people were going to really be betraying us. And that was a little bit nerve-wracking because our story is our baby. Our book is our baby. It's difficult to trust somebody that you don't know to portray your story authentically. And so when we realized that Hillary Swank was going to play Miss G, when we realized April Hernandez was going to play Ava, which was Maria, it helped me relax a little and made me realize that we're in good hands. I know that April was able to reach out to Maria to talk to her and to get her input, trying to understand Maria's perspective at that time and what she was going through. And so I thought it was a really good choice. She has that personality, that Latina sass. When I would see Maria and April together, they had such a great bond and got along with each other really well. To see someone so strong like April is to see someone strong like Maria. And for me, seeing that someone, even at that strength, have difficulties but still persevere gives hope to anyone.
It was always going to be a daunting task for any young actress to fill Maria's shoes. Maria is a dynamo with boundless energy, tremendous grit, and an incredible heart. We were so incredibly fortunate to have found a kindred spirit in April, someone who could embody Maria's essence and share it with a global audience. Now, here is our diary of the day, an excerpt from April Hernandez's book, Your Voice, Your Choice. It will be read by freedom writer Antoinette Simon.
I was a big dreamer. I was destined for greatness. But the abuse happened in a way where shame completely took over my soul and silenced my voice. The girl who fearlessly wandered the streets of the Bronx at 2 a.m. looking for another adventure existed no more. Right now, I know there is a teenage girl, a woman, a child, and even a man who has experienced such pain and trauma because of abuse. Somewhere along the way, abuse has silenced their voices, and they may feel as if they have no choices in life. I'm here to tell you that you are enough. You are powerful. You are created for a purpose. And don't let anyone tell you otherwise, because reality is not your destiny. You are beautiful. You are perfect. You were created for more than the darkness. If you choose to listen to your voice today, tomorrow will be a little bit brighter.
Parents, teachers, and anyone who works closely with young people know what it's like to try to protect them from harm. In fact, many caretakers are wounded healers who can pinpoint some traumatic event in their own life that robbed them of their innocence. Much like the Freedom Rider stories, April's story is a testament that the light of hope can never be extinguished. Healing and strength will come. You just need to find your voice. Without any further ado, it's time for our featured discussion. Here it is, from the Scholastic headquarters in New York City, my conversation with April Hernandez. I believe that enthusiasm is contagious, and our incredible guest today is so electrifying and passionate, it is palpable. So I just want to dive in, full immersion, and introduce you to the most talented, beautiful, and creative woman I know, and that is the lovely April Hernandez. Welcome to our show, April.
Why, thank you, darling.
We are celebrating the 11th anniversary of the Freedom Riders movie, but I was blessed to meet you when I heard that you were in contention for this role. So I want to go backwards so that we can talk about this incredible opportunity for you not only to be in our film, but how people stop you on the subway here in New York, or people have bootleg copies of this film and have watched it 75 times because you are the character people walk away with talking about. So let's start at the beginning. How did you even know that this film was a possibility in your acting universe?
I had auditioned twice in New York City and I didn't hear of anything. I ended up booking ER, so I moved to LA. I had no car, no license. And it was one of those things where you're just, this is the moment, right, for an actor. You just go where Hollywood is. And I was living my dream, and so I got a third callback. And they were like, but you're going to go and you're going to sit in front of the director and producer. Now, when I walk in, there were several Latina actresses. And I must say, I was just so cocky in my mind. I was like, all of you need to just go home because this is my role. And so I go into the room and I believe I had to do the I hate white people monologue. And like, Richard is looking at me. And it was such a small room. And I had so much energy. And Richard was like, can you do that one more time? He gave me a note. We did it again. And they were like, well, can you come back? And I was like, I can't. One, I didn't have a car, so I didn't know how I was going to get back. But two, I was also shooting on ER that day. And it was one of those things where I was like, you know what? If it's for me, it's for me.
Well, you know what's ironic? When I met our writer, director, Richard, he knew because of my relationship with Maria, who you play. We changed her name to protect her innocence. Mm-hmm. But he knew that Maria and Aaron Gruwell combo would have to be really important for the film. So it would be whoever would gel with Hilary Swank. Mm-hmm. So we had heard about you from Richard that same day. Like, we found her. We got to make this happen. So tell me about that first meeting with Maria, who you are now playing in the film.
You know, we just instantly connected. And then I remember we went to Ben and Jerry's and we sat down and we just had ice cream and we were just talking. And it was my first time ever playing someone who was still alive and a real character. And for me, I had never experienced racism. I never knew what it was like to hate someone just because of their race. So I had to get that information from her. That was intense. That was a new feeling for me, but I knew that I had to do such a good job. You know, I'm not Mexican, I'm Puerto Rican, and I was like, oh my God, you know, do I focus on, you know, the accent? And I said, I'm not going to focus on having an accent because it would have just not have been authentic. I just wanted to do the job.
When you were given the screenplay and you're reading it, and it's deep and it's heavy and it's dealing with racism and all of that, what did you think then about the content of this very heavy script?
Well, first of all, I had never read a script with so many monologues. I was like, as actors, we don't really do monologues unless you're working on theater, right? And so it was interesting. And just Richard's writing, he just really got each character. And I think just the stories, knowing that they were real, knowing that they were from the diary, we got to read the diary. So for me, it was just like, wow, I really appreciate that he stayed true to that.
You were the bridge between like classically trained actors like Hilary and extras who had never acted a day in their lives. So you were that bridge because you were going toe-to-toe with Hilary, playing my character, but also these beautiful teenagers who had angst and problems themselves looking up to you. What was that like for you to be that bridge?
You know, that's an interesting take because for my character, I wasn't very nice. I don't think people got to really know me until the end because that's what I had to do in order to really understand Ava, my character, because I don't think Ava trusted anyone. I stayed away. And so I don't know if that rubbed people the wrong way, but for myself, I had to do that. Just like looking at people, reading them, and I'm probably thinking they must think I am such like the meanest person in the world. But I think it was powerful because some of the kids that were hired, it took a while for them to open up. As a matter of fact, we played the trust game as an exercise, and one of the boys didn't want to do it. And he did not want to engage in anything. He was just so skeptical of everyone. And I was like, oh, okay. And he would tell me, when I leave here, I'm still going back to my reality. But eventually, he fell back and we caught him. And that changed him. But for some of the actors, like Hillary had monologues for days. And so that whole classroom scene took us about 3 days in the classroom scene where, you know, I say, I hate white people. She introduces the Holocaust mom. That was intense.
Let's talk about that. When you're making a movie about real people, you know, our book is nonfiction, we're real people, and now you're doing something that's a universality. What was your process?
I just put myself in a place, and I would just look at white people and say, I hate you. Inside, I hate you. I hate you because you're white. I hate you because you're not the color of my skin. And it really was heavy in my soul. And when that scene came up, I remember, I think it was probably the second day or the third, and Richard comes up to me, and you know him, he's like, so this is your moment. We're gonna have the camera here, and we're gonna just pull out, and you're gonna, whatever comes out. I had this outer body experience. I felt me as April leave, and I felt like I took everyone's pain and just put it in my heart. I just knew that I had to say those words. I couldn't hold back. I couldn't. It wouldn't have been fair to Richard, to his words, to the Freedom Writers, to every person who has ever felt violated. And so I felt like, no, I'm going to say this. That is one of the reasons why Ava resonates, because she was so honest. And finally, a teacher was willing to listen. And even in that moment of saying, I hate white people, I just think her trauma changed her perspective. And so that moment was key. And I think that so many people are feeling that same feeling today. I mean, for me, that I watch that film and I pick up something new every time. The scene that gets me, though, is the boy at the Toast for Change. Ugh. It was so intense because you never hear about this young man. And then all of a sudden you hear him speaking. And he said, we've been homeless. And every time I come to Aaron's class, I feel, you know, safe at home. And I was like, there's so many kids who feel that way.
You know, I don't think any of us realized then that it would be the go-to movie for teachers when they say there's a substitute or they're trying to, like, hone a lesson. So when you meet kids, what is their response?
You know, for some of them, it is life-changing, that film. I've had people tell me, the moment that I saw that film, the moment that I saw your character, it gave me so much hope that my story matters and that I don't need to stay stuck in that story, that I can make the right choices. I mean, like, for real emotional connection. And it's such a responsibility to carry on. It's not something I take lightly. Sometimes I don't even feel right because I'm like, it's not even my, those aren't my real, that's not my life. But I get it. I get it that you were affected by that. And that's the power of movies, right? That when we see a film and you know where you were, you know what you were wearing when you see something that touches you. And so that's why I think it's resonating. And I remember when we were doing the press, I had this man, he was sitting there and he was staring at me and he was like, I wasn't expecting to cry. There were so many stories that, you know, resonated with me. And I go, I know, I told you that it's not the typical teacher, you know, this white teacher comes in and tries to save urban city kids. Like, that's just not it. If you're going there expecting that, then you're going to be disappointed. But if you're going in there knowing, like, maybe this can be something completely different. And I think that's why it's been such a cult film, where it does not go away.
So because you're in this iconic role as Ava, what would you want that audience to know about characteristics of your character that you played? And what are the characteristics that you channeled into that character?
I think as for Ava, when she made that choice on the stand was her butterfly moment, where she knew. She knew if she continued in that, it would not be good. I think it's standing up for what you believe. And moving forward and being fearless. I think she was so fearless in that moment. That was such a key moment. I think if that moment didn't happen, then she would have just been another angry Latina. When I see the impact that it has, not necessarily in Hollywood because I thought that it would open more doors, and it didn't. But it opened doors in another way. I am fully operating in my purpose. And at the end of the day, I think when a person is doing that, that is true success.
For you, as a female and a Latina, do you sometimes feel that the industry needs to adapt to be more open to roles that are not gender stereotypical or race stereotypical or any of those things that could make it easy to make somebody into a caricature rather than a fully developed role?
I think at that time, when that film came out, it was around 2007, probably yes. I think now it's completely different. I mean, you have Jane the Virgin, you have shows like Orange is the New Black, where half of the cast is Latina. So we've transitioned and we've gotten better. I'm just for women in general, I think we're in such a better place. I think especially after everything that happened with Harvey Weinstein and all this Me Too movement and Time's Up, now we're seeing more and more women come together and embrace one another. I think where we need more, and now we're starting to see, is in the writer's room, where the stories need to be written, because you can have all the actors, but if there aren't any words, we don't have anything to recite.
What was that like for you to be someone in this industry when this Me Too movement started?
You know, I was working on a set. I was working on a show, and I'm going to keep the person anonymous, but they are a huge star. And he was speaking about his wife in one of the most disrespectful ways. So vulgar. And I remember standing there, and he was right next to me, and all his goons were, like, laughing. And my insides, I felt my mother's spirit. And I just was like, I have to say something. April, you might get fired. And I just looked at him and I was like, excuse me, but do you not see that I am standing here? That is so disrespectful. I'm a woman. And you're speaking about your wife like that? And then I just turned my face and I was like, I'm going to get fired today.
And you didn't.
I didn't get fired. No, but I just couldn't, and I was willing to get fired. I was willing to just say, you know what? No, I'm not going to stand there and allow you to. I don't even know your wife, but I can't even imagine that if she found out how she would feel, how degraded she would feel, and you're speaking about when everyone knows.
So let's take that power and let's channel that to, what would you tell young folks when they hear things that are disrespectful, or there's mean girls, or there's, you know, slut shaming or any of those things? You channeled your mom. How do they channel their inner April Hernandez?
I think it's just, it's that saying, if you see something, you say something. It really is. And I know that it's scary. I was willing to be fired. You know, he was the star of the show. He could have cursed me out. And then I think it would have been bad, because I would have just cursed him out and I would have gladly been like, I would have been proud. Actually, I know my mom would have been proud of me. And both of my parents would have been like, that's right. Because you don't let anyone say those things, especially about another woman. So if we are in that place and you feel that someone is being disrespectful, say something. And there's a moment where you have to live with yourself and wake up and say, did I do the right thing? Am I a person of integrity, of dignity, or am I just a person who's going to be a follower?
So you play an activist who wrote. You leave this experience and you realize, I too have a story, so I need to write, and you are now an author. Mm-hmm. So I'd love for you to talk about that life-fulfilling moment where you realize, I have something really painful to say, and I've been suffering in silence, and you had the courage and the resiliency to do that. And I would love our listeners to know what you wrote about and where you found that inner strength.
Absolutely. I mean, I never thought that I would be a public speaker. I don't know if it was during the film. I think it was more after, where I realized, oh, man, I have an intense story. I didn't realize that my story of being a survivor of teen dating violence could be something that can catapult my career in a whole other direction that can help people. And it wasn't until 2010 where I really decided, okay, let me start crafting my story. What does that look like? I don't even know what that looks like. I'm a survivor. I survived, but I wasn't even healed. I hadn't done any work on myself. I just knew that I was in a really bad situation, and now I was out of one. That alone is successful. And for anyone who is in an abusive relationship, whether sexually, mentally, physically, the moment that you are able to get out, that is success, even if it's that small or big for anyone. And so I started crafting it, and when I became pregnant in 2012, obviously I wasn't going to be working, and so I just started learning about me, about my trauma, and how I can be of service to others. So when I tell people that Freedom Writers changed my life. It really is not that cliche, like, oh, it changed my life. I'm like, no, it literally changed the direction and path that I would take.
Well, I want to talk about your beautiful words. I want everyone to go out and grab it and read it. It's called Your Voice, Your Choice. Mm-hmm. And it's about liberation through words. And as you said, having the courage and the resiliency to leave a really bad situation. And I don't want to be gender stereotypical, but oftentimes women stay in these codependent relationships and they don't get help. So talk about what it's like to give people who have been in abusive relationships advice, refuge, and resiliency.
I'm always very careful because everyone is in a different situation. So I just ask them, what do you need right now? It's amazing when I have women come up to me who are 60, 65. I had this woman come up to me and she said, I don't think I will ever share my story because I just can't, but I need you to continue. And I remember walking away thinking, that's an intense feeling to carry around, that you can be that age and just still feel like you can't open your mouth and share your story, because that's how crippling it can be for some people. And so I'm always mindful of that. I want people to really hear my words. And I always talk about finding love, because when you are in an abusive relationship, most of the time you do not think that you deserve love or that you will ever find it. So that's one of the things where I talk about, like, yes, I found a man, but I found a man who loved me and allowed me to love myself and allowed me to find myself, because I was still finding myself. And there are times where I'm not going to say, well, we don't have arguments and I don't get triggered. When I do get triggered, it just shows me how deep that is. And mind you, this has been over 20 years and it's still fresh. I can smell the person. I know exactly where I was when I got beat up. It's as if there's a part of my memory that will never go away. I've told my story so many times. Like, I can tell my abuse and I don't lose my mind. You know, I've done the work on myself. But writing it, you know, in this book, I was able to reveal more about my abuse in ways that I can't on stage, because no one will ever hire me as a speaker again because it's so dark. But while I was saying and writing these things, I was like, wow, I can't believe I went through all this. Wow, what makes a person stay through all of this? I don't even need society to ask me why I stayed. I had to ask myself why I stayed. I can't say I've come up with a solid answer, but I do understand the mind, and I understand why someone stays. And there's so many reasons, but for me, it was the shame, and it was the fear. And that's what abuse does. And I think that's why now you see this revolution now of women coming out, because they're like, you know what? Heck with this shame. I can't live with this anymore. If I don't speak, I'm going to die.
But you lost your voice for a moment. And how does that happen for someone that may not even realize that they're deferring, or they're being dismissed, or they're being silenced?
I think it was probably after year one or two, because I was in there for almost 4 years, I just could not stand up to this person. And I was a tough girl. I fought so many boys growing up. I was not afraid to fight, physically get into a fight. I was not afraid. And for some reason, I just could not. So just imagine how many women, anyone who experiences abuse, right? Whether it's a man, whether it's a child, you just lose yourself. You do. You really do. You really have, like, no voice. You don't want to say anything because you're always afraid. And you're just ashamed. And that is the biggest thing. That's the monster that hangs over you, that it's just shame.
So as a mother, two girls.
Oh, my.
What kind of lessons are you teaching them now as a mom?
So my daughter is 5. And she just completed her first year of kindergarten. At the beginning, she comes home to me one day and she was like, Mom, X, Y, and Z, he doesn't like my headband. And I was like, what? What do you mean? It's a beautiful headband. She's like, he didn't like my headband. And I said, okay. I said, so this is what's going to happen. We're going to wear a bigger headband. And then when someone says they don't like your headband, this is what you're going to say. That's your problem, not my problem. God bless you.
And she's 5.
She's 5, right? I didn't think she would do it. So one day she comes up to me, she goes, you know, Mom, X, Y, and Z said that they didn't like my bow. And I said, that's not my problem. That's your problem. Bye. Yes, as simple as a bowl, that is where it begins. That's where it begins, where someone has the power to just infect a child and say, you're not good enough. And I can't allow the world to do that. So I am constantly talking to her. I am saying that she is beautiful, but understanding why she's beautiful. I'm like, you're beautiful because you're smart, you're compassionate, you're thoughtful, you're creative, you're funny, you're powerful, you're Wonder Woman. And she flows with it. I mean, she tells her cousin out of nowhere, she was like, do you know that X, Y, and Z did not like my bow? And I tell him, it's not my problem. It's your problem. She teaches everyone. So her little cousin, they were playing a game and he wasn't having the best moment. And she was like, sometimes you win and sometimes you lose. But it doesn't mean that you're not a winner. You know, she just has this thing. And I go like, wow, she's going to impact generations that I will never be able to. And she's starting now at 5.
I love that you had the fairy tale prince. I mean, Marie and I were guests at your wedding.
Yes, my husband and I, we've been together for 17 years.
It's amazing.
I mean, at 21, it was just like he got me. I had just, you know, left my abusive relationship, so I wasn't about to accept anything. Oh no, I was a hot mess, and he dealt with it in such an amazing way where it's like, wow, you dealt with that? But my husband, he was an artist, so he was into music. He's had so many lives, but now in the last 5 years, he's been a teacher, and he's teaching Spanish in an all-boys high school. And I go, you do know that you're there to impact so many of these young men that you have no idea right now. It's going to be years later where they're going to come back to you and say, because you cared, because you had those conversations. And I just pray and hope that if you are a teacher listening to this, that is the greatest role that you have in a child's life. Being a teacher, especially if you're one of those teachers that care, because let's be honest, there's some teachers who do not care. You can change this person's road and the journey that they take, because I've had those teachers. I mean, I'm still connected to one of my teachers now. Her name is Ms. Santos. And she changed my life. One day it was high school. I was having a moment, and she's there, and I'm crying. And she's like, mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Are you done? And I'm like, yes. So she goes over, and she grabs this piece of paper, and she puts it on my shoulder, and she goes, I'll slap that chip off your shoulder. It's not about you. We speak about it to this day. And she always laughs, and she's like, you need to call me by my first name. I'm like, I will never call you by your first name because I just love and respect you too much. But to this day, I mean, I'm a grown woman with 2 children. And when
knocking
I'm
the chips off shoulders.
She will knock that chip right off my shoulder, and I've never forgotten that. Why? Why have I never? It was just such a big moment for me where I was like, get over yourself.
I love how direct you are, April. I think that's one of the reasons audiences really connect with you. Can you tell our audience about your new speaking career?
So whenever I get on stage, I always say, God, this is my last day. This is my last speech. I must give it my all. Just a few weeks ago, I was speaking at Rio Grande, Texas, to over about 700 kids. And in my story, I mentioned that I've attempted suicide twice. Mm. And so I speak about it. It's never like melodramatic. I just put it out there. And I had this huge line. So I get to meet the kids, and this one boy comes up to me and he hands me a piece of paper. And he says, I just thought about suicide yesterday. I've tried to get into a car accident on purpose, and I tried to swallow pills several times because my mom is being abused. Is there hope for me? And it was that moment of he connected with someone who felt his pain. And when you see someone and you don't know what they're going through, that's why Freedom Writers is so powerful, because yes, we all have different things going on, but we all have pain. Some pain is deeper than others. And I looked at him and I was like, yes, yes, there's hope for you. Please, please look at me. I didn't do it. I didn't do it. I had a moment of clarity before I made that decision to take my own life. And I don't know. I don't know if that maybe that night he was going to commit suicide. And maybe because I shared that, he didn't. And I just hope that he continues to know that his life is worth it. And so that's what Freedom Writers did for me in my own journey of being a woman and being an artist and how do I do this. And now with the recent suicides of Kate Spade and Anthony Bourdain, I felt it because I know what it's like to be there in that space. But I also know what it's like to move beyond that.
If you could write the perfect role for you, what would that perfect role be?
I don't know. I've always said definitely someone who's a revolutionary or an underdog. I feel like I identify with underdogs.
Like overcoming adversity.
Just overcoming adversity. I'm truly in awe of people who have been through, quote unquote, hell and back, and they still find a way to just be compassionate, to be happy, to find joy. I am obsessed with people like that, because I go, how do you find the joy? How do you find the ability to overcome so many things and still be you?
How can our listeners who are groupies and fans continue to follow you?
Definitely on Instagram, April L. Hernandez. I put everything on there, everything I'm doing. I'm currently producing a documentary. That's the big dream. It's called Born in the Bronx. And hopefully within the next year, it will be done and edited and put out into the film festivals. And I'm about to release and launch my t-shirt line, Conquista, which it's just an extension of who I am and what I do. And it was also created because I wanted to empower women, especially who have been abused, you know, to know like abuse is just a comma. It doesn't have to be the period.
If you could leave our listeners with a call to action, April, what would it be?
You know, you only have one life. I've dealt with depression. I've dealt with, you know, almost wanting to take my life and suicide. I've dealt with having postpartum and feeling like I'm never going to become the woman that I know I want to be. But how can I be better? I really do think about when people come into my presence, what I want them to walk away with. I want them to say like, man, when I'm in her presence, I feel like I can take over the world.
In honor of their truth, may we all make the choice to use our voice. That concludes our show this week. This episode was produced and edited by Bryce Cyrier and our associate producer, Clay Amontorp. If you enjoyed the show, please share it with your friends and leave us a review. Help us spread the word, share hope, and most importantly, help us pass the message of freedom so that we can lift, we can learn, and we can live our stories to the fullest. Our call to action today is this. May we speak up when we see injustice. May we be of service to others. And as our guest, April Hernandez, writes, may we listen to our voice today so tomorrow will be brighter. Until next time, dear listeners, may you write what needs to be written and tell what needs to be told. Hi, folks. It's Erin Gruelm. Thank you so much for listening to the show. We're so grateful you keep coming back for more impactful stories from freedom writers, freedom writer teachers, and our extraordinary guests. This is just a friendly reminder that we have now switched to a bi-weekly release schedule for the summer. During our busy Teacher Institute season, we'll be bringing you episodes every other Monday instead of every single Monday. But stay engaged with us online to see what we're up to and keep an eye out for more substantive content. You can follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And while you're there, leave us a comment or even send us a message. We look forward to staying connected with you and helping you make a difference.